but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Very excited to bring the BFT jury back tomorrow, Friday, 4 o'clock. 24 hours from now, we'll be mixing it up with the jurors. I gotta go find my gavel. Get that going. I think we'll get Fentress on the jury. I think we'll get Burnback on the jury. Is Vladimir the Cuban Lover still out there? Is Sir David still out there? Mark in Portland, Mike in Portland. We'll get the jury going tomorrow right here in this segment. Today, right here, we're going to talk with Tom Wistersill, Big Sky Conference Commissioner. When I get a big guest, I try to put that guest right around in this window, 4 o'clock. Yesterday, it was Warren Moon, Pro Football Hall of Famer, right here at 4 o'clock. Today, Tom Wistersill, Big Sky Conference Commissioner. He has approximately 70,000 fewer passing yards than Warren Moon. But don't we all? Wistersill joining us. Where are you today?
Well, that's quite a drop down from Warren Moon to me, but thanks for building me up. Jeez, I hear you were naming names. I was like, great, let's go to Tom in Salt Lake City here. And but then you drop Warren Moon on me, and yeah, that's pretty impressive, right? Wouldn't he be the all-time leading passer if you combined both PFL and NFL yards? Wouldn't he be the guy, I think?
Yeah, and think about how backwards it was. Like 1978, he goes undrafted. Because the mentality was, you know, we haven't really seen a black quarterback do it at a high level, and he barely got into Washington, and then he just goes and he throws for 50,000 yards and, you know, 70,000 yards total in the NFL and the CFL.
It's an unbelievable story, and there was a time where he was the best quarterback in the league. You know, say not many people can claim that, and
that's right.
But there was a time where he was the best.
That's right.
Great to be with you. Great to be with you, my friend. You doing
Thank
good?
Thank you. Yeah, doing really well. I want to bring you on because, you know, I think you could talk about a variety of different things given your experience in college athletics. But, I mean, one of the big things is, the state of things with the Big Sky Conference and how you see everything moving and the House settlement and how that might trickle down to the Big Sky Conference. How are you reading that right now?
You know, as we talked about, it seems like, you know, months ago we had a similar conversation. It was all about the choppy waters in college athletics and how hopefully this is going to settle down soon. And that hasn't happened at all. You know, we don't have a House settlement yet. I'm hopeful that the P4 or P5 conferences will decide that, yes, let's grandfather these roster caps in, because that seems to be what the judge is hung up on, is that one topic right now. Let's find a way to get that done. That's better than anything we've had in years as an entity. And then let us deal with the next problems. But we got to get that off the docket first, and because that has the focus of everybody in Division I right now. So we're hopeful in a week or two that that can happen. But I feel like I've said hopefully in a week or two many times in this process. And here it still lingers on.
Is the idea of there being a cap or a spending cap, and if there's enforcement, I got to ask you about that, whether or not you think this will be any different than when the NCAA was trying to enforce things. But, you know, with it, with good enforcement, if there is a cap in what you can spend, and NIL deals are supposed to be real endorsement deals, does that help the teams that are not at the top? Does it close the gap or at least limit the ceiling, or what does that do?
I think what it does, at least for true NIL, You know, and that would be like, you know, John Canzano, football player at Portland State, working with the local barbecue joint to put on your, you know, X profile and Instagram profile that come to Dave's barbecue once a week. And then you and your buddies get free, you know, free barbecue, you know, anytime you go in. Like, that's true NIL. I think what the settlement does is it brings true NIL at least under a microscope, a public-facing number that people can believe. Because right now, when somebody says, hey, so-and-so is getting $200,000 from this school, I never believe a word they say about the dollar figure because there's no way to prove it. And so student-athletes are going to naturally pump their number up. If they're getting $100K, they're going to say $200K because maybe that school will offer them $300K, and I don't blame them. And schools are going to be protective of their number because they don't really want it out there that they're spending $20 million on a football program. That's not good around campus. That doesn't float well with the faculty and other members of the campus community. But if the settlement goes through, the true NIL, the true value they're working on with Deloitte is how do we take a value of a true NIL deal? Should this deal for that barbecue thing we mentioned, should that be worth $1,000 or $5,000 or $20,000? And what should the real value be? And so it'll bring that to light. So that part of it is really positive. And then from an enforcement perspective, the ones that are way out there, that are run through the university and through the system, I think will be, you know, will be really positive. And truly what it should be then, the student athletes can make the money that they deserve. So you take that bucket there. Then you have the bucket of the revenue sharing piece, the 20 to 22 million based upon the school. And everyone in school will know how much money is being paid to student athlete A, B, and C. And that's great too, because then that will be public knowledge amongst the universities and that how much people are making. The part of it that is going to be unregulated still is the third party NIL. And that, you know, the collectives and that type of thing that will still have access to the student athletes. And that way we won't know what's happening. We'll know the money that each school can control through those other two buckets. But that other bucket still leaves the space incredibly unregulated. And so that's what's really challenging about this, is it solves some problems but creates others.
Tom Wistersill, Big Sky Conference Commissioner, with us. I want to ask you about the Johnson case. For people who don't know, Johnson versus the NCAA, it's a lawsuit that started with a football player at Villanova who is suing the NCAA, arguing that they should have been employees all along. How does the Johnson case potentially impact the Big Sky Conference schools?
Well, we desperately don't want our student-athletes to be employees. And quite frankly, John, every one of our student-athletes I've talked to, they don't want to be employees either. And so we hope that as the House settlement happens, these other court cases come to fruition, then, you know, we're going to figure out whether it's through national legislation or other means that let's not force the student-athletes or the universities into something that neither of them want. And, you know, yes, people can make a claim that, you know, we control the student athlete's time and that sort of thing, but no one's forcing them to be a student athlete, you know. And so their opportunities to, if they don't like it now, they can go where they want to go. They're not being treated fairly. They're not getting the resources they want. They're not getting enough playing time, whatever it may be. It is a free market. And so as long as that's in place, I think we feel pretty good about the employment issue. Ultimately, you know, I think all different levels are in different places. In the P4, you know, those schools that have $100, $150 million budgets and up, they're going to have to deal with it ultimately in a different way than we will. So I think it has different impact based upon where you are at in the ecosystem.
I am I'm worried about this, like everybody else who loves college athletics. But, again, we're talking to Tom Wistersill, the Big Sky Conference Commissioner. Success stories in the Big Sky. What comes to mind when I say that?
Well, we had an unbelievable NFL draft just this past weekend. We had three players taken, one from Sac State, one from Montana, and Montana State. And, you know, that was more than the Sun Belt had. more than the Pac-12 had, obviously, more than Conference USA. So we outperformed a number of FBS conferences. It just goes to show the level of play, the level of coaching, and the type of opportunity that our student-athletes have to play at a high level. If anybody follows me on Twitter, they'll see I always put on there, you can get there from here. You know, let's not forget Cooper Kupp, you know, Super Bowl MVP, played in the Big Sky Conference. And so there's all of these stories that we have of student-athletes that have come to our league, performed at a high level, and then gone on to greatness. And, yeah, football gets the headlines, but, you know, we've had an NBA draft pick come through the Big Sky the last 2 years as well. And so we continue to perform on a national level. We had a great tennis championship last week. We're heading towards softball next week, and then track and field, which we always do well and send a number of athletes to nationals. So yeah, it's been a great year in the Big Sky. We focus in on what we do best, and that's provide a great student-athlete experience and help them towards graduation.
The report in April was that Sacramento State was going to file an application to the NCAA to transition to become an FBS independent. The school says it's filed that waiver. You know, what do you know about Sacramento State's plan and where they're at with it right now?
Yeah, they've been really good about communicating with me, their president Luke Wood and their AD Mark Orr, really good people, and very driven to find an FBS home. Their goal is hopefully to get this waiver. It won't be decided, it sounds like, until June at a NCAA council meeting, so there's another month left to wait for some outcome on that. But they've been very upfront and honest. We have a very good relationship, and you know, it sounds like their plan is not to continue in the Big Sky in the future, whether that's for fall of 26 or 27 or whenever that happens. And if that's what they choose to do, we wish them well, and off they go. We'll continue to focus on, like I said, the things we do well with our membership, and we'll wait for the other things to happen around us as well. As you well know, and you report better than anybody, John, there's a lot happening out west here, so we'll wait and see how that plays out.
Did it surprise you that Sacramento State it wants to do that? I mean, the cost is prohibitive. It's a big jump. We've seen schools try it before and reverse. You've got one right there in the Big Sky that reversed field and said, no, we're back and we're better being where we are. Did that surprise you?
You know, I don't know if surprise is the right word. I think, you know, wherever a new administration comes in, and President Wood has been there for just a little over a year now, I think, and so I think, you know, with the other state schools there in California, he sees them at either the FBS level or the top Division I level, and I think his aspirations are that for Sac State. And you know, like I said, I think if that's what he desires and the community there in Sacramento wants to support it, then more power to him. You know, we'll be fine in the Big Sky. We got a great thing going. We're the best FCS conference in the country, and we'll continue to provide a great opportunity.
Are they just wanting to go in football, and will the Big Sky still continue to support their other sports?
So we have a bylaw that you must play football to be in the Big Sky, and I would fully expect our presidents to uphold that rule. If and when SAC leaves, my understanding is they would ask to stay in the Big Sky, and our president's council would have the ability to change that rule if they would want to. And if they didn't, then SAC would have to take their other sports to another conference, whether it's, you know, West Coast Conference, Big West, WAC, Summit, other leagues that have a similar footprint.
If they decide to go stay, you know, there's always a trickle down effect. What does the Big Sky do? Do you look to backfill? Does someone else come in? Are you good with your membership as is? Where do you stand right now?
Right now, I'd say we're really good and comfortable with where we're at. You never say never. There's a number of schools that have approached us that want to be members of the Big Sky. Right now, our presidents are not in the mood to offer membership to anyone else, but that could change tomorrow, and that's the way this world is working right now. So, you know, we do lots of planning and thinking and talking about the what ifs. What if this happens? What if that school goes there? What if this conference does that? But we feel like we're in a position of power because we've got a great conference with great history, great stability, and a great group of schools accomplishing wonderful things. So we don't feel a need or feel the hurry to do anything right now, and we'll address that when the time comes.
I am thinking about the rest of the realignment movement. You know, obviously the Pac-12 looking to add at least one football playing school, maybe some moves to be made by the WCC. You know, I've looked at maybe UC Irvine and some others as possibilities there. What do you think's going to happen? You know, just spitballing here with realignment.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit like war games, you know, where you stand at the wall and you got different pieces up there, you're moving around. And we've done that in the Big Sky, kind of thinking about all the moves that could be, you know. You know, both Teresa in the Pac-12 and Glory with the Mountain West are good friends of mine. And, you know, we talk occasionally. It's not always about this topic. You know, my gut tells me that the Pac-12 will want to play eight conference games. I just have a hard time believing that they'd want to stop at eight football members and only play seven conference games. So something in my gut tells me that, you know, that's a guess, and that's only a slightly educated guess because I'm trying to put myself in Teresa's shoes there with the leadership of the Pac-12. Just from a numbers standpoint, knowing you're going to play 12 games every year. So, you know, then you know, where do they go get those two schools from if that's going to be the case? And, you know, what happens with the lawsuit or mediation that the two are in? And does that change the dollars that are potentially flowing back and forth? All the stuff you've reported on, I think, really well, John. And, you know, so I think we're all kind of waiting to see what's going to happen in that first move of what's going to happen with the Pac-12. And then I think, you know, while we can plan and, like I said, do war games about all this, the rest of us are going to be somewhat reactive to the move that she makes. And so, you know, knowing that they've got to have this set in the fall of 26, I mean, we expect that to happen soon. I think, you know, as you and others talked about, the fact that they got the 25 media deal done, I think is step one. And now I think step two is coming shortly, and hopefully it is. And like I said, we'll address that when we get there. And, you know, we can speculate and try to move teams around and that type of thing, but it's hard to know. It's, you know, I've been in those rooms before, and people speculate what's going on, and typically they're not very correct of what's going on. So so we'll kind of wait and see.
I you know, one of the thoughts I've had is, you know, if you're UNLV, you ultimately want to, you obviously want to be in the best conference you can and get the most money you can. I see the Pac-12 as a step up from the Mountain West. I also see the Big 12 as a step up from the Pac-12. Would you be surprised to see more expansion from the Power Four conferences, or do you think anything's possible?
Yeah, I think, again, I think the tipping point, first of all, anything's possible. The tipping point, again, starts at the top. I think it matters. What does the Big Ten want to do? What number do they want to end up at? And what number does the SEC want to end up at? Because if the Big Ten or SEC took members from the top of the Big 12, then the Big 12 would want to backfill because they need X number of football games and X number of basketball games as part of their media package. And so, you know, it just depends on where those dividing lines are going to be. So I don't think the P4 is done. I think everybody's pointing towards around 2029, 2030 when those media deals are up, that the next big version of expansion happens with those largest conferences. And right now, those are the P2. Then there's the next two, and then after that is the, you know, the Pac-12 and the Mountain West and others. So I do think at the top it's not done fully, and so short term, you know, back to the UNLV thing, I think UNLV, you know, if I was there as the president or AD, I'd be thinking about not what's best next year. I'd be trying to look out 5 to 7 years from now, saying where are we best positioned, because I think those sands are going to continue to shift. And planning long term, I think, is a smart way to do business right now.
How do you promote your schools? How do you position the Big Sky schools for success in this climate? What can you do from the conference office?
Well, I think what we're most proud of is we are who we are. And, you know, I remember life. I spent 6 years as a G5 AD at the University of Akron. And the line I like to use was, we're trying to be something we're never going to be, and we're falling further behind every day. And unfortunately, that's what life's like in the G5. Trying to chase those P4 programs and the amount of money that they generate is just fool's gold. And there's just no chance that you're going to be able to make the moves you want to be able to make to make a dent in that huge dollar figure. So So, you know, for us, we don't try to be that. We're going to stay who we are. We're going to be fantastic regional universities and give our student athletes a great experience, be points of pride for the communities and the states we represent, graduate those student athletes and give them a chance to participate at the highest level possible and win national championships. I can't stress enough how great the FCS playoffs are. And getting an opportunity to play for a trophy, and we've had schools that have been in that championship game now a number of times and come close here over the last 6-7 years. But being in the playoffs and playing meaningful football in December and January, that is a huge thing for our communities and our football programs. And I wish some of the lower-end G5 schools could see that and find it in their egos to come to FCS and participate for a national championship. So we're going to continue to be that type of league with that type of leadership, and our presidents feel that way. Our ADs are great about it, and our coaches deliver that to the student-athletes every day.
January, the ESPN and the Big Sky announced an extension to the media rights deal. What kind of exposure did you get in that deal?
Well, we were able to double our Saturday nights, our big late night, Big Sky Saturday night football games, which is wonderful. So there'll be four games on national TV on Saturday nights late this year. That's really exciting for us. You know, I think what they found is the audience that we can drive out west here for those 7 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Mountain starts is similar to the FBS programs out west here. And they love the brand of football we play. It's exciting. It's fun. We have great venues to show off. So that's great. We'll continue to have all of our games on ESPN Plus, and that's been a huge deal for us, and the number of paying subscribers that we've been able to deliver to ESPN is wonderful. And then there's the ancillary things, you know, like, you know, having them be a part of our courtside show that we do at our conference tournament in Boise, and the promotional piece you get from ESPN Sports Center when they'll do some highlights of a Big Sky game and that type of thing. So they're great partners. They've been great partners. And as we've grown and put more focus on trying to become nationally known, they've been a great partner for us.
You know what you need? You need Portland State in one of these ESPN games. I need to see the Vikings playing in one of these games.
Well, that would be really exciting. As you know, they're playing a game in Providence Park this year against Montana. So how exciting is that for them to get a chance to come back downtown and show off that place? And I'm a big Barney fan just like you are, and what he's doing over there is wonderful, and got a great program and always finds a way to be competitive in this really difficult conference. So we're proud of what Portland State can do.
Tom Wistersill, Big Sky Commissioner, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, John.
Take care, man. There he goes. I want to see the Vikes play in one of these ESPN games. Showcase the home stadium. Put a spotlight on Portland State. Coming up, we're going to play Punch It Audio. In the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to talk college football with Spencer McLaughlin. Be here.